Good afternoon. Welcome to the EcoNews Report. I'm your host this week, Jennifer Kalt, Director of Humboldt Baykeeper. The EcoNews Report is brought to you by the North Coast Environmental Center, publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, EcoNews. Today, my guest is Jennifer Savage, California Policy Manager for Surfrider Foundation. We're going to talk about renewed attempts to drill for oil off the California coast, as well as the recent news that Clam Beach topped the list of most polluted beaches in the state, and probably some other ocean news, knowing us. Thanks so much for being on the EcoNews Report today, Jen.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here, Jen.
So first off, we want to talk about the president's new executive order calling for basically offshore oil drilling off the coast of California. It's a review of national marine sanctuaries and national monuments that have been expanded in the last 10 years, which is the first time a president has ever proposed rollbacks to national sanctuaries and monuments, right?
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about this executive order and how it would affect us here on the North Coast.
Well, as you said, it is couched as a review, but we all know that the goal is to open up the offshore waters to new, not just potential oil drilling, but potential fracking, exploitation of minerals that might be out there, you know, so some deep sea mining. So it's just, I don't know, I just want to say it's gross, but that would be my technical word for it. So here in California, you know, we have a long history of pushing back against oil. And over decades now, there's been so many steps taken to not only prevent new offshore oil drilling, but to reduce offshore oil drilling that already exists. There's been a bunch of progress made through the State Lands Commission with decommissioning of old oil wells, all kinds of really positive stuff for our coast. You know, our state's working toward clean energy. So it's all this progress toward a healthier, cleaner coastline. This would undo it. We've had so many issues around oil spills over the years. I mean, we have a $44 billion coastal economy. Even if you don't care about wildlife and recreation and the inherent value of the coast, the impact that that would have on our state financially is just unimaginable.
Right. And, you know, the commercial fishermen are having a rough enough time as it is without offshore oil drilling and all the potential disasters and impacts to the environment and to the fish that would bring. People who were around in the 1980s may remember this was a huge battle to block offshore oil drilling in Northern California back then. You know, for decades now, it's been a really bipartisan effort to prevent any kind of offshore oil drilling or exploration off the coast of California in federal waters or in state waters. Like you said, I mean, it's really shocking to think about having to fight this battle all over again. The bottom line is that there's a number of national marine sanctuaries that are being reviewed, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. One of them is the Greater Farallones and Cordell Bank National Marine Sanctuary, which in 2015 was expanded to go all the way up the coast to Point Arena in Mendocino County. Another one is the Monterey Bay Sanctuary 2008 expansion, right, which is really disturbing given the sensitivity and the incredible ecosystem that's come back and flourishing in the
right.
Monterey Bay area.
Well, the whole reason that these areas were designated sanctuaries is because they're so important. They're so diverse. There's tons of endangered species that live within there. There's, I think in Monterey Bay alone, there's over 500 species of fish and over 100 different species of seabirds. And I can't remember all the different marine mammals. I mean, it's incredibly bountiful wildlife. And it's not just that there's a lot of it. It's that there's wildlife there that you don't find other places. And so these areas are clearly so important and critical that we've had the good sense to protect them. And now the idea that we're going to roll back protections and potentially look for oil and gas and minerals to exploit these areas, it's unfathomable, except that nothing seems off the table anymore. So it's really imperative that people speak up about it. We in California have been really lucky. As you said, there's been such strong efforts for decades. People have been fighting to make sure that we don't have new offshore oil drilling. And it's different in other parts of the country. And I think we've had it, I wouldn't say easy, because people have been so vigilant. At the same time, it's never been a more realistic threat than it is right now, you know, for decades.
Right.
And I was just going to add that, you know, your point about it being bipartisan is really important, too. There's currently a letter signed by over 100 House and Senate representatives that are both Democrat and Republican, you know, saying that existing protections should be kept in place. So this isn't just a party line issue at all. And I think that's partly because it is an economic issue as well as, I don't know what you would call like a holistic issue, a pure environmental issue.
Right. Well, a lot of people love the California coast. That is not an overstatement, I don't think. You know, in 1990, George Bush the First issued a moratorium banning new offshore oil drilling in California and other areas too. And then in 2008, George W. Bush rescinded that executive order. So there's been a little bit of a threat since then, but President Obama basically said, no, we're not going to be drilling off the coast of California. And it's been somewhat of a threat, but nothing anywhere near as realistic a threat as it is right now. The reason we're talking about this right now is there's a comment period open right now on this review of national marine sanctuaries and national monuments. There's another national monument, the California Coastal National Monument, that people have been asking, is this going to also be rescinded? What do you know about that?
No. Well, first, for anybody who's confused with the National Monument, and then we have the National Marine Sanctuaries, just to be clear, the marine sanctuaries are out in the water, and then the Coastal National Monument is part of the land. For example, here on the North Coast, we recently expanded the Coastal National Monument to include Trinidad Head, as well as areas of the Lost Coast, and these are very special and unique areas deserving of protection. What's being done to push back is taking place on a number of different fronts. So members of the public, there's a comment period open. It's only 30 days, which is crazy when you consider like the potential impacts and the number of people who would be impacted. But it's what we have to work with. And so a coalition of groups put together a website called SaveOurMarineSanctuaries.org. So pretty easy, SaveOurMarineSanctuaries.org. And that is the easiest place to go to comment, because not only is it a short comment period, but to leave a comment on the Federal Register is a fairly complicated process. It's not just like sending a simple email. You have to go and fill out a lot of online form boxes and potentially be able to upload things if it works and, you know, that sort of thing. So SaveOurMarineSanctuaries.org will walk you through it. And then in the meantime, we have our federal legislators, Jared Huffman, Kamala Harris, Dianne Feinstein, who are all speaking out. And I know that Congressman Huffman is working on legislation to protect what is already protected, but to ensure that those protections remain. He'll be having a sort of town hall meeting in August. So if people want to attend that, I would watch his website for that. So the point is that there is a lot of action at the federal level as well as the grassroots, and then also here in the state.
Yeah, there's been quite a bit of action at the state and local levels on this issue. You know, there's so many things happening at the federal level. People kind of grapple with, you know, well, where do I really want to get involved in a way that's going to have an impact on the local level or the state level and not kill me and overwhelm me
right.
with all the things that are going on. At the state level, our Assemblyman Jim Wood co-authored what is called an assembly joint resolution that's basically to support the designations of the marine sanctuaries as they exist today, to not roll them back, not weaken any protections. Also at the state level, Hannah Beth Jackson, the state senator from Santa Barbara,
yes.
authored SB 188, which is a Senate bill that would protect the California coast from offshore oil and gas development by prohibiting the State Lands Commission from approving any new leases for oil and gas development, including pipelines and other structures in state waters. So
right.
it would protect that 3-mile strip of the ocean off the coastline.
And then one of the effects that it would have, because it would prohibit the development of new infrastructure, then even if the federal agencies did allow drilling offshore in federal waters, they wouldn't be able to do anything with it because they wouldn't have the infrastructure necessary for the tankers to come in and unload it and process it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not a direct no new drilling in federal waters because they can't do that because they're state legislators. But what Senator Jackson has been so thoughtful about doing is to close a door that they would like to see open. And so theoretically, it would stop new offshore oil drilling in federal waters, or it could, because it would make it just impractical for them to do it if you have a full tanker of oil, but you have no way to turn it into anything else.
Right. And this actually has really huge implications for the North Spit mm-hmm. of Humboldt Bay, where there's been a push to allow what we call non-coastal dependent industrial uses of a bunch of land on the North Spit. So there's all these lands that were designated in the 1980s basically for offshore oil infrastructure and other coastal dependent industrial uses. So those would be any kind of energy uses like liquid natural gas import facility like was proposed
in
2003.
Who would think of that? Yeah.
Or other coastal dependent industrial uses have to do with fishing and aquaculture, you know, the oyster industry, that type of thing. Anything that you can't do except right on the coast. So there's a major effort by the Humboldt County and also, I believe, the city of Eureka to change the uses on those lands, which involves amending the local coastal plans that govern coastal development. So basically, we have hundreds and hundreds of acres, more than the Port of Oakland, that are zoned for coastal dependent industrial uses. And a lot of those areas are just dilapidated old industrial facilities that were built before zoning rules.
Right.
So they're just kind of sitting there, falling apart, contaminated underground or even above ground, and no real economic incentive to clean up the contamination. So that impacts the bay, but it also impacts the local economy because there are a lot of uses that are not coastal dependent that people could actually be doing on those properties. And so that's moving through the process at the Coastal Commission. And it's, you know, it's going to be an economic driver for a lot of those areas for commercial and light industrial development.
Right. My understanding is that there's a shortage, is too strong a term, but that the light industrial opportunities to find places that you can do light industrial types of businesses is being very squeezed right now.
Yes, is being very squeezed by cannabis entrepreneurs. And if you're just joining us, this is the EcoNews Report, and I'm Jennifer Cault with Humboldt Baykeeper, and I'm talking with Jennifer Savage of Surfrider Foundation about the threat of offshore oil drilling and the proposed rollbacks of national marine sanctuaries and national monuments by the Trump administration.
Yes.
Another thing that's being done by counties in Northern California is that Mendocino, Sonoma, and Marin counties have all adopted resolutions supporting the current National Marine Sanctuary designations and opposing any weakening of the protections that come with those designations. And that's really important because those three counties in particular are the ones that the Greater Farallones and Cordell Bank National Marine Sanctuary are right offshore from those counties. So they clearly support it, and they're going to be expressing strong support to the federal government for leaving those designations in place.
Yeah, and for folks who are not familiar with exactly where the Greater Farallones and Cordell Bank sanctuaries are, they start about 60 miles north from Bodega Head to Point Arena. And they were doubled in size in 2015. So the danger is that it could be reduced in size. In their sanctuary, Sonoma County supervisors said that the sanctuary review would create unnecessary economic uncertainty and disregard the interests of fishermen, residents, recreational users, researchers, and state and local governments, because these weren't arbitrary. I mean, these were the establishing of these sanctuaries and their expansions, as well as the National Monument expansion, that all took in a lot of public process. So, you know, stakeholders had an opportunity to speak to it. They're, you know, and they're controversial, like, you know, where the boundaries should be. And they're not, you know, just a simple, like, let's put one here and then everybody applauds and nobody's consulted. You know, there's a lot of consultation that goes in because by and large, Californians overwhelmingly support marine protection because we know how good it is for our economy. We love to be able to fish and to surf and to swim and kayak and whale watch and all these things. And so we want to protect all of this. And as we were saying before, it doesn't always fall, like so many issues do, along party lines. There's actually a lot of support from Republicans, from Democrats, and from constituents of all walks of life. The idea that there's somehow not enough support for these is contrary to any sort of factual studies that are done. But again, facts. Not the driving factor here. And another place that people can find information, Jen, is it's just been in the news all over the place. There's been a whole bunch of different op-eds and editorials from different news boards, San Francisco Chronicle, Marin Independent Journal, Mercury News. And just a couple days ago, Dave Helvarg, who I believe was up here, he has his book, The Golden Shore, that he's written about the California coast. And he was here at HSU, so people may remember that he did a book signing, and I think he spoke. and I wasn't here for it, but I heard it was really good. Anyway, he's a great writer. He has a piece in the LA Times, and he has this great paragraph that really clarifies the issue. You know, within the marine sanctuaries, there are some state-established no-take fishing zones and areas off-limits to personal motorized watercraft. But generally, the sanctuaries are where we work and play, open to recreational and commercial fishing, to shipping, to other commerce and scientific research, as well as swimming, surfing, boating, and diving. The only activities that are prohibited throughout the sanctuaries are ocean dumping, seabed mining, and oil drilling. And that is clearly what is bugging the Trump administration. So I just love how he laid it all out. And it's important to remind people that sanctuaries aren't off limits. They're off limits to very specific exploitive, destructive activities. But they are where we play. And people love to play on the California coast, even up here where it's cold. I was at Moonstone, I don't know, a week ago or so, showing my friend's kid how to surf. And I usually am down on the spit, but I had come up to Moonstone, and it was just one of those days where it was very gray and cloudy, and then the sun broke through and just lit up the rocks and the hills, and there were like kids on skim boards, you know, people cavorting, and I was like, oh, this just Humboldt summer really can be such a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Moonstone Beach is pretty special. Yeah, I was out there yesterday, and there was a guy standing up on a rock. It was pretty low tide, and he was painting, and he had multiple canvases on the beach that he was letting dry, and it was very cool to see. And then all the little kids playing in Little River, all the surfing and kayaking that goes on our coast is just pretty amazing how much great stuff there is to do in the water.
Yeah, even here where it's cold. It's like it's not necessarily as friendly as other places. Just nature isn't as friendly. The people are, but but you have to, you know, be a little bit tougher. But there's some other concerns, though, that people might not be aware of and think about.
Right. It's been in the news quite a bit lately, mm-hmm. that Heal the Beach is a group down in Southern California that does an annual beach report card. And this just a couple weeks ago, the report card designated Clam Beach as the most polluted beach in the state. This is for bacteria pollution. People ask all the time, how can Clam Beach be more polluted than beaches in Southern California?
It's a great question.
It is a great question. I mean, the short answer is the more it rains, the more bacteria washes down into our creeks and in the bay and into the ocean. So those nearshore waters, especially where a creek discharges mm-hmm. into the ocean or the bay, there tends to be a lot more bacteria, and it just rains around here a lot more than in Southern California. I think we all know that. So Clam Beach has been in the top 10 worst beaches for 4 years in a row, but this year it was designated the worst in the state, and it has actually been getting steadily worse over the past 4 years, even during dry weather. It's not just during rainstorms.
So it's not just that other beaches are getting cleaner, and it's actually getting worse every year.
No, well, Clam Beach is getting worse, right? The mouth of Strawberry Creek is where the County Department of Environmental Health tests the waters for bacteria.
Is it bad all the time or just after the rain? Like what does the testing show?
It's been getting worse during dry weather.
Okay.
So, you know, generally it's a good rule to stay out of the water, especially have little kids stay out of the water for 72 hours after a major rainstorm, no matter where you are, unless you're not anywhere near any kind of town or development of any sort. But Clam Beach has been getting steadily worse during dry weather. It's kind of a mystery why that is, although it can be pointed out that Strawberry Creek has probably hundreds of septic systems along it. Little River has a lot more cattle and other livestock that are more visible, but there's also septic systems along tributaries of Little River, and that Little River has been a problem. But other beaches, too. Lufenholz Beach just last week was listed as being in exceedance, is the way the county describes it, having high levels, unsafe levels of bacteria in Lufenholz Beach near Lufenholz Creek.
If you are at Lufenholz, you just feel like you're in one of the most pristine places on the coast. You know, I mean, it's not that far from Trinidad and civilization, but you feel like you're away. It's lightly populated, the area. It's not like right on the edge of some urban center. And I think it's very surprising for people to realize that water right there is actually too dirty to safely swim in.
Yeah. And in fact, Lufenholz is number 8 on the beach report card, worst polluted beaches.
And people don't necessarily necessarily play in the water, like in the ocean right there, but there, that creek, like every time I go there, I see, you know, kids like getting water out of it, making sandcastles, splashing around, and it's good to know these things.
Right. You know, I should add that we have been doing a study for a couple of years now with the Regional Water Board and the County Public Health Lab to identify the source animals. So we're doing genetic sampling to identify whether the sources are primarily human, cattle, dog, birds, or other animals. We're hoping to have some results from that study really soon here, but it is a very involved process, and the Humboldt County Public Health Lab has been working really hard to become the first county public health lab in California to do this. It's called Bacteroides is the analysis. So once that is up and running, we'll be able to do a lot more studies. Baykeeper is studying Little River and Janes Creek mm-hmm. in more detail, and then the Regional Water Board is doing a single sample from the lower parts of a few dozen waterways, including Strawberry Creek.
So if people want to help or somehow support these efforts, is there anything that folks can do?
One thing people can do is if you have any ideas of where this contamination might be coming from, we have received several phone calls about places in Strawberry Creek that might be the sources of bacteria, and you can give us a call at 499-3678. And I will keep it confidential. And you could also call the County Department of Environmental Health if you would rather do that.
Maybe express to your supervisors that you support the efforts of the county to solve this problem. Maybe join an organization dedicated to ensuring clean water
on
the North Coast.
The next thing I was going to say is that we can always use more support from our local community. You know, Baykeeper depends largely on foundation grant money to do this research. Unfortunately, a lot of foundations in California have the idea that Humboldt County is this pristine place that doesn't have these kinds of problems. And so we really rely on our local members. You know, the Moonstone Beach Surf Camp has donated to our bacteria study, as well as Coast Seafoods Company and Hog Island Oyster Company, because the bacteria issues, the pollution really impacts the oyster industry. Basically, every time it rains heavily, they have to stop harvesting oysters out of Humboldt Bay. But it also impacts surfers, you know, and this is something that people do ask a lot about, like, what are the effects of bacteria pollution in the water. And the main effect is it causes gastrointestinal illnesses. People have done studies of small children. There's a study in Wisconsin that correlated children's visits to the emergency room with gastrointestinal illnesses. They're correlated with rainfall.
Oh, interesting.
You know, oftentimes people think, well, my 6-year-old has the flu or has a bug or whatever, and they don't necessarily think that it could be from swimming or, you know, splashing each other at Little River or Lufenholz Beach. There's another study actually that was done of surfers in San Diego. It was a 3-year study, and they had surfers take notes and upload information on apps about all their surf sessions during rainy weather in particular, and they found a definite increase in gastrointestinal illness.
Yeah, I know a few surfers down there who know better, but then have gone out because it's the conditions are really good, and they're like, I have to go. And then they get sick, and then they're out of the water for a couple of weeks because they're so sick. Yeah, you know, like you were saying, you expect it down there because there's so many people, and it's such a part of the cultural knowledge of, like, don't go in the water after it rains. And up here, it rains so much, and there's a lot fewer people at the beach, and it feels clean, and it looks clean. Mm-hmm. Although I have been in the water at Moonstone after the first flush early on when I didn't know as much as I do now, and I remember being surprised at how sort of gross the water tasted and smelled, and I was such an unusual experience at the time. Yeah, I know.
Yikes. Well, I should say another thing people can do is they can go to the Waterkeeper Swim Guide either online, or it's also a smartphone app that you can download. And we upload the county's data for the beaches that they sample. And they sample on a weekly basis. Every Tuesday, the county samples 5 beaches locally. And then Humboldt Baykeeper uploads that information to the smartphone app called Swim Guide. You can see the latest information there. You know, it takes a couple days to get the results uploaded because the lab has to culture out the samples and count the colonies of bacteria and all that.
Fun.
We try to keep it as updated as we can. And the Swim Guide app is actually all over Canada and the United States. Wherever you're going to the beach, you can look at the latest water quality data.
Great.
And it's a great way to find local beaches, too.
Oh, good
point.
If
you're visiting somewhere, you can find out the popular beaches. That is one way people can stay safe. And, you know, I hate the thought of telling people don't go swimming, because that's just crazy. We have to just be smart about it, especially with small children. Children who forget not to swallow the water, kind of thing. So last thing I wanted to talk with you about, Jen, is the marina dredging and the proposal to dispose of the spoils on Samoa Beach. I think it's safe to say that we have pretty much fought that proposal down, but now it's been a little quiet on that front.
I like that fighting the proposal was essentially us saying the permitting agencies aren't going to let you do that.
But it was
you know.
Pretty awkward. But the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency did make it very loud and clear that they were never going to allow dumping the spoils on the beach again, as they said 10 years ago.
What is the latest that's happening with the dredge spoils and the dredging, and where are we in this process now?
Well, the last I heard, the city of Eureka is moving forward with renting a dredge from out of the area, like they did 10 years ago and all the previous times before that, to come and dredge the Eureka Marina and take the spoils out to the offshore site that's already been permitted for many years now. The hope is that they're going to be able to do that in August or September. That would be the quickest way to get the marina's dredge, because it's already permitted. That was the intent all along, was to take the spoils offshore.
Right.
And there may be other ways to dispose of the material in the not so distant future. But for right now, the dredging really needs to happen as soon as possible. I mean, it should have happened 3 years ago.
Yes, but it's unreal when you go by the Eureka Marina, just to how filled in it is.
It is insane. And the Woodley Island Marina is getting bad, too. In good news, though, there's a bill moving through the state legislature that Humboldt Baykeeper supported, and San Francisco Baykeeper mostly is driving this bill. It would allow money from the Greenhouse Gas Emissions Fund, basically the cap and trade fund, to be used for moving the dredge spoils to wetlands for wetland restoration. And so that's been a big holdup for the Harbor District, is not having the money to move the spoils around a lot, you know? And so they bought a new dredge that has a pipeline with it where they could pump the spoils to a wetland, but that can only go so far. Mm-hmm. You know, you can only have a pipeline pumping dredge spoils so far before you have to install more pumps and all this sort of thing. But moving it by trucks is very expensive. So that might be a source of funding. And the reason is that wetland restoration will actually sequester carbon, because wetland soils absorb carbon. We're hopeful that this will make it through the legislature by the end of the year, and then some of that state funding could become available for those kind of projects next year.
Anything that would enable the city and the Harbor District to really get ahead of this and shift into being able to do things ahead of time and have the conceptual ideas, but actually have the funding to do it as well. You know, it'd be so good for everybody.
It would. And, you know, we're not the only port that's dealing with this. I found out through the state legislative process that California is the only coastal state in the U.S. that has no budget for dredging.
Which is crazy when you consider all the places being dredged.
Yes.
Constantly. Yeah.
It is crazy, and I don't understand why it is, but hopefully that will change. Any last thoughts you want to leave the listeners with?
You know, we covered a lot of different topics today, from national marine sanctuaries to coastal national monuments. There's also an overarching another executive order. Like the reviews and executive orders are really difficult to keep track of at this point, which is probably not an accident. So I just want to make a pitch for people to go to surfrider.org, and you can find all this information there. We have a new campaign page, Save Our Marine Sanctuaries. There's tons of links to more information. You can go to saveourmarinesanctuaries.org as well to follow up on the conversation that we had today. It's a really imperative time to stay active. I know people are probably feeling burned out with this administration, but we have to keep fighting the good fight.
That's right. And you have to be selective, but you have to keep active and not become either apathetic or overwhelmed. So
yes.
So we'll have links with the archive post after the show airs so that people can get to the different places that we're talking about through those links.
In case you weren't sitting there by the the radio or your...
with a pen and paper.
Exactly. Right.
Well, thanks so much for being here today, Jen. This has been really good.
Thanks for having me on, Jen.
This has been the Eco News Report. My name is Jennifer Kaltz of Humboldt Baykeeper, and I've been your host for the past half hour. I was speaking with Jennifer Savage of Surfrider Foundation. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call our listener comment line at 826-6089. If you'd like to replay this interview or share it with others, you can go to the KHSU archives at khsu.org. And as I mentioned, we're now podcasting. You can subscribe at iTunes, and please leave us a review. The Eco News Report is produced at Humboldt State University in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Many thanks to Fred McLaughlin for engineering. Join us again next week for the Eco News Report.